Moncrief on News Talk.
Lafcadio O'Hearn might not be a well-known name in Ireland, but in Japan, kids learn about him in school, where he is seen to have made a major contribution to Japanese culture. Paul Murray is the author of A Fantastic Journey, The Life and Literature of Lafcadio O'Hearn. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So tell us something about his early life, because it was quite an itinerant life he led.
Indeed. No, well, Lafcadio O'Hearn, or Patrick Lafcadio O'Hearn, to give his full name, was born in Greece, what's now Greece, in 1850, and to an Irish father who was an officer surgeon in the British Army and a Greek mother. Shortly after his birth, his father left to go on another army posting. And then 2 years later, young Patrick Lafcadio and his mother came to Dublin. And he spent the next 13 years in Dublin. And he was brought up by a great aunt. His mother left, went back to Greece. And then he was brought up by a great aunt, a wealthy widow lady. And he lived firstly in Rathmines and then 73 Upper Leeson Street. So he spent formative years of his life in Ireland. And the main thing I'd say about particularly Upper Leeson Street, he was haunted by horrific dreams. He thought there were ghouls coming to kill him. Ghouls that could actually kill you. And he writes about this towards the end of his life while he's in Japan. He reminisces about it. So for a man whose whole life was connected to horror, the horror started here in Dublin, where he grew up on Upper Leeson Street as a very privileged young man, the heir to a great fortune.
Yeah, though that seemed to just disintegrate once he'd left school. The money all kind of went away.
It did. His aunt fell under the influence of one of the Hearns of County Waterford, and she moved to England to be with him. She brought Hearn there when he was 13. He spent 4 years in a boarding school in the north of England. And then she lost all her money through the misadventures of this Hearn person, or Molyneux as he was. And so he was suddenly cast down into poverty, spent 2 years in London, really living in the most appalling conditions. And then at the age of 19, he was given his passage to America. He goes there. He spends the first 5 years or so again living in poverty, doing the most menial jobs. And then he gets a break. He becomes a journalist. And then for the rest of his life, he's a respected journalist and writer.
Yeah. And while he was working in the United States, was it mostly in the United States he worked, or was he sent abroad a lot?
No, he was entirely within the United States between 1869 and 1877. He spent the first 8 years in Cincinnati, where he made his name, and then he spent 10 years in New Orleans. Then after that, he left America to go to the West Indies, where he spent 2 years, the French West Indies. And then he came back to America briefly, went on to Japan, and then he spent the last 14 years of his life in Japan.
Yeah, and the decision to go to Japan, was he given an assignment there, or he just fancied going there?
Well, he, like a lot of things with Hearn, it's very complicated. He came back from the West Indies. He didn't really have much in the way of a job. And so Harper, the American publisher, sent him, gave him the assignment to go to Japan, spend quite a short time there with an artist called Farney. And they would do a series on Japan for Harper's Magazine. Unfortunately, Hearn had a bust up with Farney when he found that Farney was being paid more than he was. So he was kind of shanghaied. And so he got a job as a school teacher in Japan. And he that's what he did for his first 6 years. Then after that, he becomes an academic. He's a professor at Tokyo University, and which was, you know, hugely respected in Japan.
Yeah. Now, can you tell what it was that made him stay in Japan? Because I suppose once he'd had that bust up, he might have gone back to the States, for instance, or back to the UK.
Yes, yes. And he was a wandering spirit. And all his life, wherever he is, he's thinking of moving somewhere else. But I think in Japan, first of all, he fell in love with the country. Hearn, I suppose by virtue of his background, was alienated from the West. So he didn't share mainstream Western values. That's particularly important in Japan. He's not an imperialist, he's not a nationalist, which is very different from most other Westerners of the time. So he falls in love with Japan. He sees Japan from its own perspective, which again makes him really unique. And then he meets the woman who would become his wife, Setsuko Izumi. And they form a partnership, which was literary as well as personal. And then they had children. So that kept him in Japan. And that resulted in him, in fact, giving up his British citizenship, which he had at the time, and becoming a Japanese citizen and taking a Japanese name, Koizumi Yakumo. And that's the name by which he's known in Japan.
Right. And so I assume he learned to speak Japanese.
Not really. He wasn't, he wasn't a linguist. Mm. And his genius really was often getting other people to do the donkey work. His genius was in the English language and also his cross-cultural understanding. And I guess I've been a diplomat in my career, and you understand actually language isn't always that important. It's your attitude to the culture that's important, your sense of empathy with it. Mm. You're willing to explore it from its perspective rather than yours. And that's what Hearn did.
And the Japan at the time he lived in, this was prior to becoming more militaristic or indeed westernized. And would he have preferred to have kept Japan that way?
He would, but he was there. Funnily enough, the period he was there was called the Meiji era. And that was a period of great transformation. It had started a few decades before, when the Japanese realized if they didn't industrialize and modernize, they would simply become a colony of the West, as so many other countries were happening to at the time. So Hearn went there as part of that Meiji transformation. He was there as an English teacher to begin with, then as an academic in the field of English. So he's part of this great transformation, but he hates it at the same time. He hates Tokyo, he hates the telegraph poles, the modern shops, all that kind of stuff. And he wants to live in the interior in a kind of a pure Japanese world. And one of the wonderful things, of course, about the 13 books he wrote in Japan is that he describes that world in marvelous detail. So if anybody now wanted to know what was Japan like in the 1890s, I'd say read Lafcadio Hearn.
And was it his mission, as he saw it, to explain Japan to outsiders, or perhaps to a degree to explain Japan to itself?
Well, I think he was explaining to outsiders, because in his lifetime he was published in English almost exclusively by American publishers, and his big audience was in America, to a lesser extent maybe the UK and places like France. So what he's doing is he's exploring Japan for this English-speaking audience. And what he's really saying to them is, you may think you're morally superior in the West, but you're not. You're, at the moment, you're materially superior, mm-hmm. but Japan is actually morally superior. And he believed he had found in Japan a modern society which was parallel with that of ancient Greece. And having a Greek background, which he identified with, that was very important for him. So, as I say in my book, his vision is double-edged. On the one hand, he's explaining the West, he's explaining Japan to the West, but he's also explaining the West to itself. And he's saying to them, you may think you're superior to Japan, but actually you're not. Mm-hmm. He's quite an extraordinary character. His vision is quite extraordinary. And I would argue that his vision has been largely vindicated by events since then.
Yeah, and going back to the nightmares he had when he was much younger, he obviously saw resonances of that when he came across these kind of Japanese folk tales.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there were obvious parallels between Irish or European and Japanese folklore. And when he was growing up on Leeson Street, his great aunt employed servants. And one of them, particularly from the west of Ireland, used to tell him ghost stories, which afterwards he said, you know, should never have been told to a child yes. of his tender years. Also, there was a great library. And he was allowed to read all kinds of books, including some of the classic Gothic writers in English that were, you know, even today, they're pretty strong meat. So for a young boy to be reading this stuff was pretty advanced. So his nightmares in Dublin were, I suppose, a fusion of the loneliness of having lost his parents, but also the fusion of the Irish folklore he's hearing and the Gothic literature that he's reading at the same time.
And so the work he did in Japan, kind of adapting these folk tales, Was that during a period where, because Japan was modernizing, those things were being overlooked a little bit?
That's right. Yeah, the Japanese were kind of throwing out their old culture in this race towards modernization. And Hearn was saying, you know, hold on a sec, there's a lot of value in these older things. And so with the help of his wife, who used to go to the old shops and buy ancient books of folktales and so on, she would then tell him the stories, and he'd get her to repeat them over and over again. And then he wrote these masterful kaidan, as they were called, Japanese ghost stories, on the basis of that kind of information. But if you look at his Japanese memories of Ireland, you can see that the kind of horror that was there in his childhood is exactly the horror that is in those Japanese folktales as well. Mm. And some of them, of course, have been filmed in over the last sort of 60 years. One of them in particular, Kaidan, was on at the IFI here in Dublin. And that's regarded as one of the great masterpieces of world cinema.
Okay, so would there be a certain amount he's revered in Japan for having kept those stories alive?
Yes. In Japan, after his death, his work was translated into Japanese. And as his reputation kind of declined in the West, it rose in Japan, where he is now a national figure. So you can mention Koizumi Yakumo to any Japanese to know who you're talking about. And he's greatly respected, I think, for his love of Japan, his respect for its culture, and the fact he's saying to the Japanese, don't throw out all your cultural heritage. There's a lot of value here. And so a lot of that heritage only really survives by virtue of the fact that Hearn wrote about it. So he was a kind of a great folklorist in Japan who was seen now as having performed a great service to Japan itself by preserving so much of their heritage in his work.
The book is called A Fantastic Journey, The Life and Literature of Lafcadio Hearn. Paul Murray is the author. Paul, thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.